Okay. Yep. Thank you very much. So yeah, let's start. I want to talk about a bit of the mathematics or the fundamental mathematics of erasure coding. First about me. I'm not a software developer, I'm just a mathematics student, currently studying in Oslo, and I'm a big fan of OSTEM, so that's why I'm here. Yeah, first, what is erasure coding? So you've probably heard that erasure coding is a redundancy technique for storage systems, so essentially for data protection. And it enables especially storage efficiency by distributing data in a smart way over different nodes in a cluster. So, and what's essentially first done is that we are given some data, and then we split it into k chunks, and then they are mystically encoded into n chunks, and by this then n minus k chunks of the encoded chunks are going to be enough to recover all the data. Also, what's quite important is that it considers transient and permanent failures, so it's not trying to repair errors in the disks, but just considers them as an erasure. It has less redundancy than replication, so that's the nice thing about erasure coding, and it's, for example, typically used in cloud storage. So, yeah. First, a bit about the history. So the fundamental idea behind the erasure coding was presented by Reed and Solomon in their paper from 1960, Polynomial Codes Over Certain Finite Fields, which is a very mathematical title. But it wasn't really applied at that time. So first, there were the redundant array of independent or inexpensive disks, and it's usually now applied since the early 2000s. So now we start with the Reed-Solomon code, which is like the fundamental basis of erasure coding, and we consider the simple string hello world, and we divide it into five chunks. So like this, so that they all have the same size, and then they are encoded, as I said before, and then we get, for example, now 8 chunks. And the important thing is that 5 of these 8 encoded chunks will be enough to recover the whole string hello world, the data. But of course, what is this encoding and how do we recover this data? Therefore, we now need polynomials, which you hopefully have seen at some point in school. And yeah, we call these numbers a0 to ak minus 1 the coefficients. And a polynomial, for example, looks like this. So the wet one in the middle is, for example, the simple polynomial where a1 is 0 and the others is 1 and the others are all 0. And above there's one where a1 is 2 and a0 is minus 1 and then the others are all 0. And the one underneath then has a2 equal to 0.5, and it's then a quadratic polynomial. Now we need to use a fundamental theorem from mathematics about polynomials, and therefore we now try to draw polynomials through points. So first we look at this point A, which is simply the point 2, 2 with x and y coordinates 2 and 2. And if we look at very simple polynomials that look like this above, we see, okay, the only one that directly goes through that point is the one that's just simply constantly 2. But if we look at polynomials that are a bit more complex, we see that we have different options to draw them through these points. And if we add another point, we see, okay, there's again only one unique polynomial that directly goes through these two points that looks like this. But if we, again, continue the whole thing and consider polynomials of a higher degree, so that are a bit more complex, we again get the same that if we would add another point, there would only be one unique polynomial of that form that would go through the three points. So this is essentially what we observed, summed up. And this gives then the theorem. And this looks a bit overwhelming, maybe, but it's just what we observed. So given k coordinates, where the x-coordinates should be pairwise distinct, there exists a unique polynomial that looked like this, that attains just these points on the graph. And equivalently, we could also say if we consider distinct points x0 through xk minus 1, each polynomial that goes up to degree k minus 1 is uniquely determined by its values. How does this help us? And what does the polynomial really do? The central idea is now to construct the polynomial, or more specifically, the coefficients of the polynomial by the data that we split it up. So we considered these five chunks, and now if we look at the first chunks, which is just the letters H and E, we have that the decimal number for this, these two letters, by just some simple encoding, it doesn't really matter now in the example, is 26,725. Then we take this M0 to be the first coefficient in the polynomial, and that is then done for all the other chunks as well, but then we have some x values that we multiply them with. So we get this polynomial, which looks very scary, and if we try to plot it, it looks also a bit horrible because it attains really, really high values. But now, why did we have the mathematical result? Well, we saw from the mathematical result that we can uniquely determine this polynomial by considering in total five points. So here's again the theorem. And for example, what is typically done is that we consider the x values 0 and up to k minus 1. And these are then, in our example, exactly these points. That can we simply compute it. And here they are plotted. But that now doesn't really introduce redundancy, because we know we need these five points to uniquely determine this. So we consider more points, for example, 8 points. And these would be then the coordinates. And then the idea is to just distribute these n coordinates that we have now so far onto our cluster. So they are all saved on different nodes. And this, from these nodes, we now have that if we consider any five points, so any five coordinates for our polynomial, we get a uniquely solvable system of linear equations, and that's why we can uniquely redetermine our polynomial, which was essentially the data. So, for example, because if the nodes 1, 5, and 7 fail, then from the node 0, we get that the polynomial value should look like this, and then from the y value, we get this also from the node, and same can be done for all the other nodes that are still left. And, well, this is a system of linear equations in 5 variables, and we have 5 equations, so we can uniquely recover these coefficients, which are, again, simply the data we have. But now, of course, we saw that, for example, for 0.4, we get very, very big values. So, and if we simply consider the letters, we had two letters make up 16 bits, but this number would, for example, take 24 bits, so we need more space, so it doesn't really make it better. But that's why then the so-called Galois fields are used. So this is what is done there, and that's what also forms these, especially these Reed-Solomon codes. And what is done there is that we essentially don't look at all the numbers, but we restrict to using only the integers 0 up to, for example, in our case, 2 to the power of 16 minus 1. And then we don't only have the coefficients in that range, but also the values of the function. So P4 would then also be some number in that range. And of course, the normal computation doesn't work with this. So on Galois fields, so fields and mathematics also define a specific multiplication and a specific addition. So they have a different system to use this, but it essentially also only involves modulo calculations and some more divisions. So it creates a bit more complexity when calculating, but it's essentially works. And then the nice thing about these Galois fields is that also this theorem that we had about the uniqueness to recover the coefficients from the polynomial also still holds over these fields, and that's why it then works with the Galois fields. And then, of course, we have that the numbers that we want to save on the nodes are only of 16 bits and not larger. So then with these Galois fields, we finally get that we can tolerate n minus k node failures, but also that is storage optimal, meaning that we can construct the data from any k of the n chunks with the minimum storage capacity, which is then simply n divided by k. And for instance, very, very large clusters, like, for example, storage systems like Google Colossus has a redundancy value of 1.6, or Facebook F4 has a redundancy value of 1.4. And here the splitting, for example, explains that Google Colossus also has splits the data first into 6 chunks and then encodes in a total of 9 chunks. And also a very nice thing about these Reed-Solomon codes is that the values n and k that we looked at, they can be chosen arbitrarily, essentially. We just have this one condition that the number of encoded chunks has to be smaller than 2 to the power of the number of bits from a particular chunk, because otherwise we can't solve the system of linear equations. And another very useful thing is that we can, if we want to consider scalable storage, so first if we call the collection of these n encoded chunks that we have just a stripe, that's a normal terminology, and then we consider each chunk that we had before as the collection of more chunks. So, for example, here we say that the first chunk is made out of 4 chunks, and the same also holds for the other chunks. And then we consider to create this polynomial only, for example, for the first line of the data that is given by these division of the chunks. And then we also get like the first line is then the encoded first line in the unencoded chunks, and that makes it especially useful when updating or changing the data, or also when recovering, to make it so the computations are smaller, because if we have very big chunks, it also the computations get much higher. And another useful thing is that we can configure the Reed-Solomon codes also in the systematic form, which says that the final n encoded chunks are made of the k original chunks. So we just have the additional, we have the original data together with the n minus k parity chunks. So it means that it's also feasible to just read the data and not only consider it in the encoded state. And yeah, there are also still many more other erasure codes that also just go more into the details of the overhead that is created in repairs and updates. So for instance, regenerating codes, local reconstruction codes, SD codes, also rate and sort of on low density parity codes, but they also all base essentially on this same idea, but with adaptations to make it better in the performance. So that's already it. Thank you very much for your attention. Just feel free to contact me via email, or please ask if you have any questions. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about the performance? Did you mention the reliability and everything, but you didn't mention what performance?
I mean, the performance, yeah, so the question was about the performance and not so much about the reliability. I haven't looked at it too closely, but it's essentially depends on the selection of chunks you choose. And then if, for example, if the chunks get smaller, the computation overhead at each chunk also gets smaller. So, but it's what's essentially done is when you encode, you just calculate values of the polynomials. But when you're decoding, you're solving a system of linear integrations. So, and that's like a very standard mathematical algorithm for us. So I don't have too much of the details, but yeah. So it's many additions and multiplications, essentially. Yeah.
You have like a secret that you want to share with n parties so that the k parties can recover it. From cryptography uses essentially the same idea of encoding your secret over a polynomial time so you can recover it. But I've also seen that you can recover it using Lagrangian interpolating polynomials instead of solving the linear system. And I think that is a bit faster, depending on details, I guess. But that's another way to do it.
Yeah, so essentially it was noted that it's very similar also to secret sharing techniques, and that also for the polynomial interpolation parts, what we saw with the points on the graph, that instead also another basis could be used. So, for example, Lagrange polynomials, if they are known to you. So, yeah, of course, that's all making the performance better, and you can encode this in very different ways. But it was just to show what essentially really happens in the erasure coding part, because it might not have been known to many people that it uses polynomial interpolation. Yeah?
Question, you have the K for 5, and it was always 2 bytes, and now when I have only a word that is 4 bytes long, then I only have K equals to 2. How do I get the up to 5?
I mean, so the question was about choosing the n or the k values for the when you're, for example, looking only at 4 bytes. Well, for 4 bytes, this erasure coding is essentially not really great. So it was just a small example. But typically, the chunks are a bit larger, and the k can always be chosen to be any value, so it can be anything between 1 and maybe the number of bits that you have, so it's really up to choice. Yep. Yes?
So in modern storage, we've got layers of compression, encryption, checksumming, and where do we put erasure coding between these layers? Or what are the trade-offs if we put them here or there?
So the question was about where erasure coding is placed in comparison to encrypting and different stories. I mean, the erasure coding part is mainly about the recovering of data and being able to recover it. So, I mean, if you have encrypted data, I guess you could just consider the encrypted data in the beginning and then use the encoding by the erasure coding to apply it. So I think it's two different approaches. So, I mean, the encoding part is not really about making it, decrypting it, encrypting it, but it's more about the storing part and to recover it easily. Yeah.
When there are more than the values that are needed for recovery available, would we have an overconstrained system of linear equations? Would that make it
So the question was about what we do if we have, if not all of the redundant nodes die, essentially.
Yeah,
but
like a normal operating
yeah. So if, for example, in our example, only one node would have died, we could have derived, instead of five equations, seven. But then the additional two other equations don't really give us additional information because we just need the five equations to recover the data. So, but yeah, when, for example, we look at recovering algorithms or things like that, then questions like these become more relevant. Yeah?
Doesn't it give us error detection if we have an over-specified matrix? So, I mean, the additional ones, if they don't play up, can't we use error detection there as well?
Yeah, I think so, but I mean, essentially, the erasure codes. Oh, yeah. The question was about error detection, if we have like additional equations and then see, okay, the equations don't line up. So erasure coding was essentially, so these Reed-Solomon codes were also constructed come more from the telecommunications field, and there they also function as error-correcting codes. So yes, essentially this could be done, but it doesn't have to. So yeah, it could be used. Yeah. Yes?
I'm not sure if I got it correct, but from my understanding right now, the Y values of the first K chunks carry the semantics of the characters we want to train the code. I'm not sure if I got it right. But when it's right, how do I choose the next chunks to get to the n chunks, and when some of the first k die, but I have enough from these n, I can reconstruct the polynomial because I can calculate the coefficients. But then I would also need as metadata the x values of the first k at each chunk to be able to get the information I want if the semantic is carried in the y value.
So the question was about the x and y values that we save in the chunks. So I don't know if I understood correctly, but I mean we don't really. So we just save the n encoded chunks. So in total, and
so, do the y values carry the semantics of the characters being coded?
Not really. So if we, for example, look at the first coordinate, just a sum coordinate, this is the function value. And this is determined, as we saw here, by summing over the encodings of the coefficients multiplied with the x values. So it all plays together into each chunk, yeah.
Just a small question. So size-wise, compared to the original data, how much storage would this agent codes occupy for example, the original space?
So the question was about how much space the encoding by erasure coding takes. And this is really depending on the choice of the values n and k. So we saw, for example, here, the minimum storage redundancy would be is n divided by k, and that is attained. So if we choose n to be equal to 1, equal to k, then it, of course, doesn't give us anything new, but we have the same space. And yeah, it depends on these numbers. So if, for example, n is twice the amount of k, then it takes up twice the space. But it still gives us a better reliability on the system, except if we are considering just the k value equal to 1. Yeah. Yes?
I know it's not your question, actually.
actually. Yeah, it's not about math, it's about picking up. Is there already hardware which implements exactly this algorithm and math already like in the chip?
So the question was about if this is erasure coding is also in some hardware.
Yes.
I think it is used, but it's not really hardware specific, because it's just about saving these values on hardware. So I don't know too much about this.
I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure most modern SSDs use something similar to this, so like LDPCs for checklists, which also I do think give you like some sort of data corruption and erasure protection.
And CPU will have instruction sets for if the usual SSC doesn't
match. And ECC RAM might do the same. Like ECC RAM, right? Error correcting RAM.
Yeah.
It's a slight version.
Sure.
Yes?
I was going to say, every example I know of has it called organized in a systemic layout. Can you think of any examples that don't?
I haven't really looked. The question was about if there are any examples of this where it's not encoded in the systematic form. I haven't really looked at many other examples, but it's essentially all the same thing, because you're just changing, like, the, if you consider the matrix that's created by the linear systems of equations, it's just applying simple changes, and then it's equivalent. But I don't know if it's used in that way somewhere.
I just have one more little comment that struck me. When you lose a disk in that storage array and you want to restore it and you have a redundancy of maybe say 3, you can pick any of other you can pick any of 3 of other disks to replace the information on that disk I want to restore. So the main advantage that just struck me at the other time. So the main advantage would be that I don't have to read the copies from just one disk, completely saturating it. I can just read 1/3 of data from one disk, 1/3 of data from another disk, and have it, because I have enough redundant information on 3 other disks. Just want to make that comment.
You have to, even. Any more questions? Comments we can have later in the hallway. All right, thank you.